Thanks for joining us for Inspire Indeed, where we're going to learn about some community issues and the amazing nonprofits that are working to address them. Today, we'll be speaking with the leader of a nonprofit that's quietly providing critical services to children and families in our community. Nadine Marsh Carter is President and CEO of Children's Home Society of Virginia. She's joined me to share a little information about Children's Home Society and the community issues they're focused on addressing. Welcome, Nadine.
Well, thank you, Elaine. I'm so thrilled to be here today and share a little bit of information.
Thanks. It's great to have you. You know, Children's Home Society of Virginia has been around for, what, over 100 years?
That's correct.
Yeah, but I think there's still a lot of folks who don't really know what you do. Could you just give us some background information about Children's Home Society?
Absolutely. I'd love to. I think you hit a great point in that we have been serving the Commonwealth of Virginia for more than 112 years now, and yet few people know about the services that the agency offers. We have been in existence since 1900, and we are a full-service adoption agency that's been licensed by the Commonwealth of Virginia. What that means is we are in the business of creating families, and our mission is to find a permanent home for every child, whether that's a healthy infant, a child with special needs, or perhaps an older child who's been languishing in the foster care system and really needs a safe, permanent home. So we're thrilled to have been working with children and families. And in fact, during our 112 years, we have found families for more than 12,500 children and counting.
Oh, wow. That's impressive when you look at it in the volume like that. But it's also impressive when you just look at those individual families and the individual children that you're really making a difference for.
Absolutely.
Now, you work a lot, I take it, with the families that are seeking children to adopt. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. But we also really see ourselves as advocates for children in need of a family. Mm-hmm. So we work with a number of families who've come to us and have decided they'd like to adopt a child, either because they've had challenges having one biologically or because they'd like to expand their family through the gift of adoption. But on the same side, we're working with children who have, for circumstances beyond their control, not been able to stay with their biological family and need a safe, permanent family. So we're making connections from both processes.
I see. Do you also work with the mothers who are going through a really difficult time in their lives in terms of trying to make the right decision for their child?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. As an adoption agency, we really have three core programs. And the first is truly our pregnancy counseling or birth parent counseling program. Through that, we are a resource to women who have found themselves in the crisis of an unplanned pregnancy, who aren't sure where to turn and need to know some of their options. We have professional social workers, counselors who are available to meet with women and explore all of their options with them. Our social workers meet with women 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. They're available to be there to provide non-judgmental counseling and help them determine what is the best plan for their future and for their baby's future. And as a non-sectarian agency, we really place a lot of emphasis on not passing judgment, but really providing education and support for both birth mothers, and often there are birth fathers or extended family members who mm-hmm. have a real interest in the outcome of the pregnancy and just want to know what are their options, and we're there to be a resource for all of the parties so that we get a great outcome for the child.
Now, it sounds like you're really meeting the parents wherever they are, both literally and figuratively.
Absolutely. We really recognize that in times like this, confidentiality is critical. And so we will go meet a birth mom where she is, where she'd like to meet, whether that's at a library or a restaurant, wherever she feels comfortable, just having a one-on-one, very confidential chat with a social worker who has worked with many other women in the same circumstance and can really help connect them to community resources and give them information. Maybe they need housing, perhaps child care, prenatal care, substance abuse treatment, whatever the challenges are, our social workers are there to make sure they feel supported and get connected to the resources that they need.
Yeah, it's probably just what they need at that time in their life.
Right. And it's ongoing, Elaine. Mm-hmm. Even after they've made a determination, we let them know that we are there for them to help them work through their decision-making process.
Now, I think sometimes when people picture adoption scenarios, what immediately comes to mind are the babies. You mentioned mm-hmm. working with the babies and finding a loving home, and I think that's what a lot of us think about, but you mentioned that you work with a lot of older children that are seeking families as well.
That's correct. And what is an interesting phenomenon, not only in Virginia, but throughout our country, is that there are an increasing number of children who are available to be adopted through the public foster care system. These are children, like in Virginia, who've been unfortunately victims of abuse or neglect at the level where they they can't return to their biological family. They're currently in the custody of social services, and with social services at the local level has determined there's no biological family member to which this child could be returned, and so we're working to find an adoptive family for these children. On any given day in Virginia, there are about 1,300 children who are available to be adopted today. The public is often not aware. There are great kids who are simply victims of a really difficult set of circumstances and now just need that chance for a safe, loving family. And we're out there as advocates for these children, quietly recruiting families who can meet the needs of these kids and help them get onto a better track for life.
You mentioned that there are families that aren't able to take care of their own children. And can you talk a little bit about how a child actually becomes a part of the foster care system? Like what they've been through to get there?
Sure. Often these children are victims of very significant abuse or neglect. Their birth families are in a tough circumstance. Often we see them ravaged by substance abuse or unstable housing or illnesses that just prevent any of their family members from rallying to the needs of the children. Social services is often contacted because someone in the public or the community notices the children are suffering in some way, and once social services does an investigation and Child Protective Services makes the determination that it's not safe for the child to be home, then they're placed in foster care. And foster care is a wonderful short-term solution to get kids out of a crisis set of circumstances while the social service agency works with the biological family to try to reunite the family. I mean, they'll work with them for a fair amount of time to get the family brought back together. But at a certain point, if social services makes a determination it's just not safe for the child to be returned home, then they begin to make a permanency plan for the child and work to find an adoptive family. And that's where Children's Home Society, as a private agency, has a contract with the state to go out and find the right family for these kids. So they've suffered abuse and neglect. Mm-hmm. There's been a time lag while we work with the biological family to try to get that restored. And now the children, when we come into the scene, are really at the point where they desperately need a safe, permanent family that can help them heal from the initial abuse and neglect that got them into the system, but also the loss that comes with not being able to be returned to their biological family.
Then that's a lot that the child themselves are dealing with.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's counseling that the children, they're often getting counseling, treatment therapeutically, and we're working with the prospective adoptive family to make sure that they're trained to meet the needs of the children. Every child is different. And so we make sure that the families are aware of the needs of these children and that, again, they're great kids, but they have been hurt and they need that healing and sense of safety that an adoptive family, that lifetime commitment that they haven't had before. And so training is critical, support, ongoing support, which we provide our families as well.
How long do you provide that ongoing support for adoptive
families? For a lifetime.
Oh.
We are committed to the families for a lifetime. There is an initial 8 weeks of preparatory training where the family will undergo the training even before the match is made. Then they are matched with young people that we've identified they could meet the needs of these children. And we provide 6 months of very close supervision. It's supportive supervision. It's not our agency coming in saying, you must do this. But it's more, here's a challenge that's arisen, and here as a parent now, how you can help respond and get the child past the challenges that they're facing. And then after the adoption is finalized, we let all of our families know that we are there as a resource. They can call us at any time. And when, in fact, we have staff dedicated to that, what we call post-adoption support, that's so critical because we want to make sure that these adoptions last. The children have had a disruption once or twice in their lives before. The last thing we want is this new family to fail. And so we make sure that we put in all the supports that are needed to make sure these families stay intact.
Well, it sounds like the support you provide is what really is going to make it successful in the long run. But I imagine that there are a lot of prospective parents or families that are coming that maybe have something in their own lives that's bringing them to make the decision to adopt an older child. Or, you know, how do you find the parents that are looking for this option to make a family?
You're absolutely right, Elaine. For many of our adoptive families, this is a calling that is truly genuine to them, and yet we have to find them. And so we do pretty aggressive recruitment. In fact, identifying families is one of our biggest challenges. It's the most rewarding when we are able to find a family. But we work with the faith community. We work with civic groups. We target audiences that might meet the needs of a particular child. A good example might be if we have a child with a medical challenge like Down syndrome, we might approach a group that has worked with kids with Down syndrome in the past and find out whether there's someone there who would be available for a child.
I see. So you're relying a lot of partnerships in the community to do your work.
Community partnerships and public awareness. Candidly, things like this opportunity to just get the word out that there are waiting children who are awesome kids if we can just find the right family. Book clubs, civic groups, small nonprofits, any way we can get the message out that there are waiting children and that you just have to have a real commitment to a child and the capacity to love and understand where they are and then the belief that you can get them to a better place.
Well, if somebody's interested in adoption, maybe they've been thinking about it for a while, but they're concerned that they don't have the resources to make it happen, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that many of the myths that the public hears about adoption simply aren't true, that you do not have to be wealthy in order to adopt. In fact, when you adopt a child out of the public foster care system through an agency like ours, there are no fees associated with that adoption. It is subsidized by the state because we don't want a high fee to be a barrier to a great family for a child. And we firmly believe that wealth is not a prerequisite to being a great parent. And so you don't have to be wealthy. You don't have to own a home. You don't have to be married in order to adopt. Single folks do adopt. And in fact, in many cases, because of the nature of the abuse that the children have suffered, it is often appropriate for the child to be with a single parent where they feel more comfortable and safe. And so again, we're always looking at the child's need and making the right match in terms of a parent. And so there are many ways that the public kind of has a perception about adoption that simply aren't the truth. And we're working through shows like this mm-hmm. and through the media to try to get that fact out.
So where would they go to learn a little bit more if this is piquing their interest?
I think the first place might be a website like Children's Home Society, which has information about waiting children and the criteria for being an adoptive parent. Our website is www.chsva.org. Or they could consider coming to one of our orientations about adoption. We have them monthly or every other month where we're providing information about the amazing opportunity that adoption offers and some of the challenges that are inherent with adopting a child, whether out of foster care or a child with special needs. And so check out the website, come to an orientation. What's mm-hmm. critical throughout the process, even when you're getting just have an initial idea that you might want to do this, is getting information and being fully informed. And agencies like ours really make that very clear to our parents. We're going to provide all the information that we could possibly give them so that they're best equipped to meet the needs of the child and that they understand what they're going into. Although I'll have to say, as an adoptive parent, the reward is always ours. There are challenges invariably, but just the gift of knowing that a child is safe and loves you and learns to trust and will have you in their lives, and you have them in their lives for the rest of your life is just amazing.
So you're an adoptive parent yourself.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and I noticed there's a JD after your name. I didn't think that your law training was bringing you to this role as the lead of a nonprofit.
I think you're absolutely right. When I went to law school, I saw myself as an advocate in court, and what I am now is an advocate for kids. What an amazing opportunity. And you're right, I came to Children's Home Society, in fact, as a client. My husband and I had not been able to have children the way most folks do and decided, well, we want to really be parents, and that's our goal. And so we came to an orientation and were amazed at the need in the community for adoptive parents and the opportunities to have a special child in our lives. And so we went through the process and were so impressed with how the home study process, which many people think might be...
What's that, a home study process?
That's great. When you're going to adopt, the agency has to make sure that every family is appropriate. And so the first step in that is to undergo a home study, which means that social workers work with you to understand the type of child you're best prepared to parent, to help you as a couple or as a single person understand why you want to parent and what you expect out of the experience and what to expect out of parenting. And it's a real growth opportunity for the adoptive parent, but also for the agency to understand how they can find the best child that you can meet that child's needs. And so there's a certain number of interviews and an opportunity to just really dialogue about what parenting will be and how it's a lifetime commitment. And so you go through the home study. There are some background checks that need to be conducted. These are all required by the Commonwealth, whether you work with Children's Home Society or any other adoption agency. We are all licensed and highly regulated to make sure that the agencies are making sure appropriate families are getting these kids in their homes.
Right. I mean, that's what we would all want to be taking place, definitely.
Right.
So you went through that home study process yourself.
Yes, exactly.
With Children's Home Society.
And learned as a couple. Mm-hmm. And we're so excited when we got the call. And then after we had adopted our daughter, about 2 years to the day that we got her, we got a call that her parents had had another child, and we were able to adopt her sibling. And so what a gift.
Wow. Is that very common that you're able to adopt siblings?
It is common, not as much with infants, although we do see that happen. And I'll pause there and say the reason that happens is that I think it means when the birth parent has gotten in a crisis and received good support and counseling and they find themselves in another bond, they're coming back to the agency because they know that the services they get will be equally professional and compassionate. And they recognize that it's great to have siblings together. What we do find is for children out of the public foster care system, we do have siblings available. And oftentimes the children are older, and so there may be one or two additional siblings in a group. And we are always seeking families who are able to take siblings. There's an increasing need, I should say, for families who can take a sibling group.
Now, going back to your personal story, I'm curious. Now you have two children that you have adopted yourself. And you're working with the organization that made that happen. That must make your day going to work just all that much more fulfilling.
It makes my day going in fulfilling, and my night times when I tuck them in and I say goodnight, and I think this is what it's all about. The simple things, the simple gift that family is. And it's hard to articulate, but often people will say, boy, your kids are fortunate. I'm like, no. We're the ones who are fortunate because parenting is a journey that's amazing, and you watch these little ones develop and become the next leaders of society. And so it's a real win-win for sure.
Now, with your adoption process, I hope you don't mind me asking this, but I've heard some people talk about an open adoption where the birth parents or birth mother remain in contact. How did you experience that?
In our case, we had a closed adoption because that's what the birth parents chose to do. But we are finding more and more that more open adoptions are the priority for the biological families. And what that means, Elaine, it can really vary. Some birth parents, when they decide to place a child, just simply want a picture and a letter from an adoptive family to get a sense of who they'll be placing their child with. Other birth mothers would really like just a one-time meeting to just have a face-to-face encounter with the family that they're going to place their baby with for the rest of their lives. And we facilitate those. They're called non-identifying meetings, which means we don't exchange names and addresses and phone numbers, but at least the couple have a chance to meet with the birth mother and if the birth father's available and just get to know them a little better. Some birth parents like ongoing just letters or pictures, updates periodically during the life of the child, but often we find that tapers off as time goes on. And then there are some birth parents who request a one or two time meeting with the adoptive family where more information is exchanged. What's critical is that we always make sure our adoptive families feel comfortable with the arrangements and the birth parents. And that's when it's a healthy adoption, when there's no intimidation or discomfort. The reality is we've been doing this, as I mentioned, 112 years. Birth moms, you hear the myths of them stalking or hiding or trying to come back years afterwards and get their children. That's simply not the case. They've made heart-wrenching, sacrificial gifts, and then they're ready to move on and continue their lives and knowing that their child's in a good place with a good family. And so we really don't see that, but we will facilitate a level of openness that both parties feel comfortable with, and that way it's a good match.
And then you also facilitate years later, isn't that correct, if somebody wants to be reunited or learn more?
Yes, there are television shows. Often you see the search and reunion shows that unfortunately I don't think really represent what happens there. Search and reunion is an active part of the service that our agency offers. Because we've been doing this for so long, we do have folks who've been adopted who decide when they become 18 or older that they'd like to know more about their biological heritage, about their biological family. And so they come back to the agency and we provide them the information that the law allows us to share. And if they request, we will reach out to a birth family and see if there's some contact that they'd like to make. The search and reunion process is amazing. It's very emotional, often incredibly positive. But what's key to our agency is that we're providing support to both the adoptee, the person who was placed, and the birth family, so that those matches are comfortable to all of the parties and are a win-win. And some families really appreciate being reconnected. Others, it's a little more painful, and so we're there to provide counseling, whatever the outcome. And we do a high volume of that because we've been doing this business for so long. I'm always amazed when we see these search and reunions take place at how sensitive the birth family is to where the adoptee is. And a good example might be we get birth mothers who will contact the agency when they develop, say, breast cancer, just to let our agency know, hey, we've had this, and my daughter may want to know that in her future medical records. And so birth parents are very sensitive to the biological connections and how important they can be, and they're very great about sharing information, and we want to make that a resource available to our adoptees.
Yeah, it's great that you can provide that resource. If somebody is listening to you today and wants to get involved with Children's Home Society, but maybe they're not in a position to become a parent or a foster parent, how else could they help out Children's Home Society? How would they get involved?
Well, that's a great question, because there are many ways in which the public could help. And what's key, one key way we can really use the public's help is getting the word out. First, that there are waiting children, that Virginia does have a real challenge with not getting these kids placed into permanent families. And so whether they host a coffee group or a small luncheon, or we can come share information about waiting children with a book club, that's critical, because you never know when that might ultimately lead to an adoptive family. Certainly, we look for volunteers who can help in the office with providing support so that our staff can get out and do the recruitment and the family training that needs to happen. And always fundraising. We are nonprofit. We are 501c3 that with more support can serve more children. And that's our goal, to get every child. Our vision is to have every child who's waiting in the public foster care system for a permanent family to have a safe, loving, permanent family. There's a real challenge in Virginia in that our Commonwealth ranks very low. In fact, we're 49th of the 50 states in terms of getting children out of foster care and into permanent families.
Is that right?
And that's a sort of quiet epidemic. And it's important, because not only do you have 1,300 children waiting, but not only are their lives negatively impacted by not having a permanent family, the whole community suffers when they aren't adopted. The outcomes for children who are never adopted are very sobering. Statistics and studies have shown time and time again that when children are never adopted, when they simply languish in foster care until they turn 18 and then do what's called age out, or just are out on their own on day 18, their outcomes are just very negative. In fact, 1 in 4 of the children who are never adopted end up incarcerated within 2 years of getting out of foster
care. Within 2 years?
Within 25% of the kids. 1 in 5 are homeless within that same time period. And in fact, the fastest growing population of homelessness in our country right now are kids out of the foster care system, who at 18 are just simply not equipped to go out and live their lives on their own, find an apartment, get in school, get a job, all the things that you need some support with at 18. I know I wasn't ready at 18. And so the 1 in 6 never get out of high school. The rates of teen pregnancy and substance abuse, there are so many negative outcomes that are disproportionately higher for kids out of the foster care system, that it makes the need to get them in permanent families that much more compelling. Compelling for them, because we don't want these kids who've already been so let down to be let down yet again by society. But there's a real impact on our whole community when you look at the rates of incarceration and pregnancy and or premature pregnancy and homelessness. We all win. It's truly a great outcome when a kid gets adopted, because they have a family that gives them the sense of confidence and connection and values, the things that help them be a good citizen.
And then it's really changing their odds on how they can contribute to the community in the future.
Absolutely. It's a great investment early on when you get a child into a family, as opposed to what you pay out in terms of so many resources when a child ultimately ends up in one of those negative places.
Well, that's wonderful that you're available to help make those matches with the permanent families, because it's clear that that's making a real difference. Now, before we wrap up, I wonder if you have an example of just maybe a success story. Obviously, you're a success story with your family, but do you have in mind a success story of maybe a recent family you've worked with?
Wow, there's so many success stories. I have the advantage of going in the office every day and seeing those families created. One young lady comes to mind now. She's 21. When she came to us, she was in the latter stages of her pregnancy and had two small children already and was in a very abusive relationship with her boyfriend, frightened, unable to share with her family that she was expecting because they were frustrated, candidly, that she'd already had two young children, unemployed, had not finished her education, and yet loved her baby to be. And so we were able to provide her very intense counseling for that last month or so of her pregnancy about her options, help connect her to a program where she could get her GED, talk to her about the domestic violence, and connected her with a support group for women in that situation, and then even helped her look for an apartment so that she could have her independence. So we really had put the things in place that she needed to parent. And that's something that's a priority to us. We are not an agency that's out there to tell women you need to place your baby because your circumstances. We're going to get you to that place. When she delivered, she still felt uncomfortable with her circumstances. And so we provided some short-term care to the baby to make sure that he was safe and with a nurturing family while she got all of these systems in place. And ultimately, because of the stability that she had, we thought she was going to parent, and she thought she was, until she recognized right before she was going to take the baby home that she still was not at a good place in life, that while she had gotten someplace things worked out, what was best for her child was to be with a family who had longer-term stability and was so ready to parent that little guy. And so she picked a family from our waiting family list, and they had that one-time meeting. It was powerful. There were a lot of Kleenex, and they had a chance to really get to know one another. And at that point, she knew that it was the right fit, and she made the placement. I think that's a great example of some heart-wrenching choices that were self-sacrificing, but all about what's best for that little guy. What's best for the child. And he's going to grow up loved, cared for, and in a very stable, healthy place.
That's a wonderful story. Thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you.
And thanks so much for sharing everything that you've told us today about Children's Home Society and the children that you're working to serve in the community. If you'd like to learn more about Children's Home Society of Virginia, the website again is
www.chsva, as in Children's Home Society of Virginia, .org.
Great. Well, Nadine Marsh Carter, thank you again for being with us. And thank you all for tuning in to WRIR 97.3 LPFM. You've been listening to Inspire Indeed. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I hope that you've heard something here today that inspires you to think about how you might make a difference with your deeds.